And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Lawyers for some of the 500 people arrested during the protest in Cincinnati in late May and early June want charges dropped. The Cincinnati Mass Defense Coalition handed over a motion to the city solicitor's office demanding the curfew charges filed against the protesters be dismissed. The motion claims the curfew ordered by Cincinnati Mayor John Cranley was unconstitutional. So joining Cincinnati Edition to talk about the arrest and the motion to dismiss charges are Friedman and Gilbert partner Jacqueline Green. Jacqueline, thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And we also have with us Hamilton County Public Defender's Office Training Director Sammy Silverstein. Sammy, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
And you can join our conversation at 513-419-7100 or email talk at wvxu.org. Jacqueline, why was Mayor Cranley's curfew order unconstitutional?
So there are a number of reasons and a lot of legal bases presented in the motion explaining the unconstitutionality of the curfew and also the curfew's invalidity under the Cincinnati Charter. But in relation to the U.S. Constitution, we assert that the curfew order was vague. It leaves a lot of terms undefined. It's not clear who it applies to, how it applies. For example, what does it mean to appear in a public space? Private gatherings are not prohibited, but you can move about the city in theory to go to those private gatherings. Or, you know, what's an essential worker? Ohio defines this. Cincinnati hasn't. Of course, Ohio also specifically exempted free speech activities from its definition of essential worker. In addition to that, we argue that the curfew violates the freedom of speech and freedom of assembly, which of course, are guaranteed to all people under the U.S. Constitution. Protest rights are constitutionally protected. It's one of the highest categories of speech, and we hold it dear, and we hold that protection very important in this country. And the restrictions that were put in place here through the curfew were not narrowly tailored. They were far reaching, well beyond any kind of potential, legitimate purpose. And the curfew also constituted a content-based restriction on speech, which means, you know, that the specific content of the message of these protesters was what the curfew aimed to curtail. The curfew was utilized to punish people who were protesting in support of the movement for Black liberation and in opposition to racist policing and brutality. You know, for example, we don't see curfews after blank or the Women's March or after sporting events where people fill the streets after being at a game all day. And the curfew is used just here under these circumstances. Where people are protesting for Black lives and a number of other grounds. I could go on. And I'll also mention, like I said, that the curfew is invalid under the Cincinnati Charter. Only council has the power to declare an emergency in Cincinnati per the charter. No such emergency was declared at all or anything in relation to protests. And the mayor did not have the power to do what he did in enacting this curfew.
Sammy Silverstein is the Hamilton County Public Defender's Office Training Director. Sammy, can you tell us a little bit about the charges that most of these folks face and what the potential penalties would be?
Sure. So people have been calling them curfew violations, but that's wholly inaccurate. What people were actually charged with is what's called misconduct at an emergency. And there's two versions of misconduct in an emergency, a misdemeanor of the fourth degree, which is the lowest misdemeanor we have in Ohio, and a misdemeanor of the first degree, which is the highest misdemeanor charge we have in Ohio. It's, in fact, what domestic violence is. That's a misdemeanor of the first degree. What an OBI is, if you're driving while drunk, you get a misdemeanor of the first degree. And the city chose to charge people with the misdemeanor of the first degree version of this charge, which means that while out, the city has to prove they were violating the curfew, they were purposely violating the curfew, that they can tell who was violating curfew. And then while they were violating that curfew, they were causing a disturbance and harm to others. So it's greatly overcharged, and they used this charge and specifically chose, and we think they did it, you know, before people even went out to protest on Saturday and Sunday nights, which were the first nights the curfew was in place, so that they could physically arrest people, so that they could physically round people up, arrest them, and take them to jail. Because most of our clients were trying to abide by the curfew when they were arrested. They were corralled in different alleys and in different, some people were corralled in Finley Market, different areas of our city, in large groups, normally groups of 50 to 100, all told to sit down, and at that point were all arrested. And most people were near their cars or walking to their cars, and they even ordered people out of their cars so that they could arrest them for this charge. And we know that they did this so that when people were physically arrested and taken to jail, their humanity would be invalidated and that they would be scared and fearful and to go back out and protest again. And so they did it to silence people and to try to squash this movement so that the powers that be wouldn't have to make the, you know, change. This movement would be silenced.
We're talking with Sammy Silverstein, Hamilton County Public Defender's Office Training Director, and also Jacqueline Green, an attorney with Friedman and Gilbert, also a partner there. We're discussing the effort to have charges against arrested protesters in Cincinnati dismissed. Jacqueline, in our previous segment with Iris Rowley of Cincinnati Black United Front and Al Gerhardstein, a local attorney, we heard them suggest that it would probably be better policy not to arrest people during these situations, but if there is some sort of violation, I guess irrespective of what you might see as a constitutional order or not, that a cite and release would be a better method. Is that something you would agree with?
Well, I mean, you know, first I would say that you can't arrest people for protesting. It's a fundamental right. And what the city has done here is in violation of that fundamental right. In the event that there is some criminal act that the police have deemed it necessary to arrest someone for that doesn't violate constitutional rights, then I would agree that holding people pre-trial, holding them in jail, is a completely unnecessary, traumatic, and abusive practice. But in relation to protests, I would not say that people should ever be arrested for this conduct because it is highly protected under the law. And in particular, in relation to these protests, as Sammy said, you know, arrests were designed to gut the power of the movement. They're designed to pull people off the streets and to silence this particular message. And that is impermissible under the U.S. Constitution.
I know that the motion to dismiss was filed with the city solicitor, because the city solicitor handles these misdemeanor charges. But we know that Hamilton County Prosecutor Joe Dieters will be holding a virtual press conference this afternoon at 1 o'clock. So right after this program ends. And according to a news release from his office, he says that he will conduct a virtual press conference to discuss, quote, recent riot cases. Now, we don't know anything beyond that. Would either of you know anything about what that might be?
I know nothing.
Okay.
I know nothing either.
Okay.
It's curious, though, because all of these cases are assigned to the city prosecutor.
I suppose that it could have something to do with, I mean, if we know of any felony charges that emerge from other instances, maybe some of, I don't know, vandalism or something that might have happened in some of the earlier days of the protests. But we'll all see at 1 o'clock, and we will have that covered for you here at WVXU at WVXU.org and on the air at 91.7. I'm curious, Jacqueline, if you see any type of civil action by any of these folks. We heard a lot of troubling stories about their experience while they were incarcerated.
You know, I think that's a decision that every person who's had their constitutional rights violated has to make for themselves, whether in these circumstances or any others. What I think is important, though, is that what the city has put forward in terms of attempting to kind of solidify their ground and pursuing these prosecutions is that they're discussing through city council and through the prosecutor's office, through various avenues, plea deal offers, offering, for example, dismissal of charges in exchange for waiver of civil rights. I mean, I think that's sort of an implicit acknowledgement that there was wrongdoing here and trying to get out of accountability for misconduct, at the hands of city actors, including the police. And it's a coercive offer for the city to make. But in terms of whether anyone pursues potential civil litigation, that's a decision that everyone has to make for themselves and, based on their personal circumstances.
Sammy Silverstein, you're with the Public Defender's Office here in Hamilton County. And I'm wondering if you have any precise numbers on how many of these folks who are facing this charge or charges have turned to your office for legal assistance in this period.
Sure. So we're a part of the Mass Defense Coalition. So we're a part of the group representing all of the protesters. We do know that 511 people were charged with the specific charge of misconduct in an emergency. So when Elliot Isaac says there's 550 people arrested, 511 were misconduct in an emergency. About another 20 were the first night before the curfew was in place were charged with failure to disperse. And then the remaining are the ones who have the more serious charges. But of the 511, I believe we represent about 400 of those individuals. And again, we're working in coordination, though, with the larger Mass Defense Coalition. And there's a lot of area lawyers who are helping us in our efforts to represent all those people.
Well, Sammy, help us understand what that means exactly, to be representing that many people all at once as a coalition. Is this a situation where you need to be in contact, obviously, with all of these individuals and have them sign on to be represented in this manner?
Yes. So when we sign people up for our representation, we had an initial conversation with them about what mass defense means and whether or not it's something they may be interested in. And then after we had that initial conversation at arraignment court, we had lawyers in our office who worked day and night to call every single person we represent to do an individual interview, because it's still a very important part of our representation that we represent the individual and we respect their individual needs and desires for these cases. And so we made that clear and figured out what everyone's individual needs were. And then we also held meetings with our clients, somewhat mass meetings, where we talked about things we could talk about without confidentiality, the way we see the case going and timelines and how to get in contact with us. But again, we also have recruited lawyers from the community who are taking some of these cases pro bono and are offering to help us with this representation. So we filed over 24,000 pieces of paper last week with the clerk of courts and served on the city for discovery motions and motions for bill of particulars and a jury demand in every single case. We couldn't have done that without the support of the community. But we're rocking and rolling and going strong.
And Jacqueline Green is a partner at Friedman and Gilbert. And Jacqueline, let's say that your effort here is successful and the charges are dismissed. But it's possible that more of these protests will follow. Certainly not all of the inequity and justice has been addressed. What do you think the takeaway would be? What do you think the community can learn if you're on the winning side of this and a reevaluation of process is conducted?
Yeah, you know, the city has to take away from this that it cannot pull people off the streets, arrest them brutally, hold them in inhumane conditions. It cannot do that. It cannot do that under any circumstances, and certainly not in retaliation for people speaking up for the movement for Black lives and speaking out against police brutality and racist policing practices. And in terms of the community, what the community takes forward from this, you know, and hopefully we do win, is that we can hold the city accountable. We can demand that our rights are respected and protected, and that the courts will uphold and respect those rights as well, and that police cannot run roughshod over fundamental rights that all of us have in this country to exercise our free speech and freedom of assembly.
Sammy, I'll give you the opportunity to answer that same question.
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
Sure. I mean, what do you think the takeaway should be for the city, the government, and maybe even the broader community if your efforts are successful here?
That we have space in Cincinnati to criticize our government, right? The purpose of these protests is to support Black liberation and to take a deep, hard look inside of our institutions and see what we've been doing wrong that lead to statistics like we have for the violations prohibited, the violations of the stay-at-home order. The cause, I believe it's almost 80% of those arrests to be done against Black people in our community. We have to have a space to criticize that and do better. And these cases should be dropped because that's what these people are doing. They're asking their government to represent them as humans and to respect their humanity and their dignity and to be able to criticize their government.
Jacqueline Green is a partner at Friedman and Gilbert. And Sammy Silverstein is with the Hamilton County Public Defender's Office, where she is the training director. Thanks to both of you for the time you gave us today.
Thank you.
And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer of today's show is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Our theme music is composed by Rob Fetters. You can find archives of our program online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Marks.